This call is being recorded.
Hi, this is John Richardson. Today is January the 26th, 2020. I am talking to you from Toronto, Canada. And among the things that I do as sort of a holdover from all my own years of LSAT preparation, which was a lot of years, I actually am the administrator of an LSAT study group, which is, you can find it at facebook.com groups, LSAT study group. And I don't participate in it too much, but I do find it interesting because I've always been interested in law school admissions and LSAT. And I would say that most of the heavy lifting in terms of conversation and information at the present time comes from what I perceive to be a really, really good and interesting group of individual tutors who are forever providing, I think, good, interesting LSAT advice, advice on the admissions process, and, you know, and sometimes they act as LSAT therapists as well when the stuff gets, you know, really, really tough. And I thought it might be interesting to put together a series of interviews with really any LSAT tutor in the group, and I hope in some, you know, over time to interview everybody. But today, I'm going to start with Alexander Kaplan, who's a California-based guy who I think, you know, be accurately described as helps people get into law school and become lawyers, but principally in his role as an LSAT tutor, and he's done some very interesting initiatives. So, Alexander, thank you so much for chatting with me today. How are you?
John, thank you so much for having me. I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Just excited about 2020, a new start, and it's going to be an interesting cycle. And I say that because it feels like it's barely begun.
It has very, very barely begun and will continue for a long time. So you operate your business out of Southern California. Have I got that right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm based in Orange County.
Okay. And so when you work with clients, and we'll talk about who you're working with in a second, but you're working in person, remotely, how do you actually interact with people?
So it's a combination of remote as well as in person. I have some space. It's kind of like a live work type of WeWork thing that's, you know, within my building, and you know, ample parking as is important in Southern California. And so I do have a good number of in person folks, but I would say a majority of the folks I work with are both, you know, all over the country and sometimes, you know, all over the world. I there have been years where half my clients are in China, and it's not as much as this year, but you know, it's been an evolving thing. And I you know, with the new digital LSAT, I wound up kind of getting roped into the whole, you know, Surface ecosystem, and I now use a Surface Pro X as kind of like a digital whiteboard, and I use Skype, or I'm hoping to roll out using Teams because it's a little more substantial, and it's going to become more user-friendly as things go on. And yeah, it works very well, and I just find that, honestly, sometimes the remote thing is better than in person because it's just you, the narrative, and the whiteboard.
No, that's interesting. Of course, you know, when I was doing this stuff, none of those things existed. So it was either group classes or it was, you know, individual tutoring and that sort of thing. I have the distinct impression, I'm just asking this out of my own interest, that the individual and small group tutoring market is sort of is beginning to eclipse the large classroom size approach. Is that your impression as well?
Yeah, I would say, to be completely frank, I don't think that the classroom setting can really do the heavy lifting that needs to be done if you really want to, you know, hit your full potential. I mean, sometimes that's not the goal. I've had applicants who, you know, I know they could have, you know, picked up another 5 points or this or that, but if you bring it in with the application, you're going to be okay. But at the end of the day, the classroom and that unidirectional approach, you know, just the, you know, more is better, you know, let's do 80 hours of in classroom time. It's just not, I get too many, I mean, I get a call every week from somebody who either, you know, spoke at graduation or just has these, you know, the academic, you know, accolades, you know, left and right, you know, beyond mine, of course, you know, they'll start with a base score and they'll end with getting their base score on the test and working one-on-one, that does not happen. You know, it just doesn't. And so I think that says something, but, you know, the classroom might, you know, provide certain elements as well that are important, but I haven't felt the need to start moving to the classroom type setting. I'd be open to it.
Mm-hmm. Do you work with people from the beginning and say, hi, Alexander, I'm here. I know nothing. I haven't done any testing at all. I put myself in your hands. Do you work with that type of person, or are they mainly people who say, God, I've been at this, I'm totally frustrated, I always get parallel reasoning questions wrong, or, you know, a certain type of logic game or something like that?
It's interesting you say that. I mean, I should probably start tracking you know, how many people come in where it's just, you know, they're working with me. I'm, you know, the first one in line. I mean, I've had situations where I'm you know, I'm tutor number four, and that's including, you know, a full class before and then other tutors, and it's and sometimes, you know, it can be a little nerve wracking. I'm going, you know, I mean, if, you know, it hasn't, three times it hasn't worked, you know, maybe, you know, I get a little nervous about that. But it really, at the end of the day, I have to, you know, just like I tell my clients, to be very, I would say, you know, agnostic, or I use the word disinterested a lot, but and I try and make sure that it doesn't resonate as, you know, not interested, but it as in kind of neutral to whatever material is being presented to you. And so I really don't judge, you know, I try and ascertain where a student is performing, but I try and, you know, kind of practice what I preach, where it, you know, is brought up, you know, the parallel reasoning thing. I say, you know, don't, you know, this need to cleave things and kind of give them different names. And I mean, yes, there are certain, you know, approaches that work better for certain, you know, question types, but at the end of the day, it's not this, you know, paring it apart is not as important as having a fundamental shift in the way that you think about, or the way that you avoid false inferences under pressure. And so I try and take an approach where I kind of gauge what needs to happen, but I say to myself, you know, don't set the mark. Don't, you know, just, we're going to make this happen. It doesn't matter if you've had four folks before me, or I'm the first in line. Let's just, we've got one job, and that's to get you as many points as we can so that you can put yourself in a position to not have to pay for law school. I mean, that's essentially
right. Or you know, first get into law school, of course. Let me ask you this question. And when I was teaching LSAT, and I would, you know, somebody would come up and say, well, you know, I'm having this particular problem with the LSAT. I often thought that their problem was entirely different from what they thought it was. Do you find that? In other words, you know, they say, I'm having trouble with this, and this is a symptom of a larger sort of problem that they're kind of ignoring. Have you found that?
I would say a majority of the time that's the case, and it's, I don't want to sound like somebody who's, you know, analyzing or just, you know, kind of picking apart what people are saying, but I'll give you an example, and it's going to be really embarrassing. I'll try and you know, veil the facts, and I think the client of mine would appreciate it. But I had a client who was working in a pretty tough job for about 10 years, you know, dealing with criminals, and this client said to me, "I'm scared of this test," and I kind of stepped back and I said, And you know, maybe it was a little too much, but I said, you're scared of the test. What do you do every day for work? And I just kind of said it, and not in a patronizing way. And the client goes, oh, I work with, I said, who are your clients? Criminals. I said, and what does their freedom depend on? Your signature on their urinalysis, right? But, and so you could wind up, you know, having to sign off. If you're either dishonest to the state or they're going away. Is that not scary? And the client goes, yeah. But I said, how do you deal with that? Because I don't know how I could deal with that. And they said, well, it was tough the first year, but now I don't even think about it. And I said, if you can deal with that, you can deal with the stack of paper in front of you. All right? And I was very direct, and we saw a huge bump. I mean, it's at the end of the day, I like a radical simplicity. It's not about what type of question are you? Do I need to reverse and negate? It's training wheels. That's leaving the training wheels on, and that's what I find happens. You know, kind of speaking to your earlier question in the classroom, it's like you're getting training wheels on. Somebody just never takes them off. I mean, this is something that you've got to use these methods and then forget them and just kind of. And just kind of figure, get to a point where you're no longer using these tools, but you're kind of going in with a Swiss Army knife as opposed to bags of Band-Aids.
In other words, you need to be as flexible as possible with these.
Exactly.
Tools. Sure, absolutely. I mean, I think that anybody who thinks there's just one way to do an LSAT question is probably capping their LSAT score, right? Because they've already decided in advance, that they're only open to looking at things in one particular way. So now, moving beyond LSAT just for a second, we'll come back with, but you are, I said at the beginning, essentially what you're doing is helping people get into law school and become lawyers at minimum. So what kind of services and how do you work with people beyond LSAT?
So, this is the thing. I kind of take a, if you see something, say something approach, and it's, sometimes I do ask permission or what have you, and I really try not to be salesy or anything like that, but I've just seen over the years that it, this kind of cult of I've got to have a 170, and it's not that
let me stop you there just for a second. Let's talk about the cult of having to have a 170. Do people need a 170?
Absolutely not.
So why would any rational person want to give LSAT the satisfaction of giving them one more right answer than they needed?
I mean, I don't know, and I tell clients to do the best they can and really work and cut everything out that's unnecessary, cut all the noise out. Just if you have to drive in silence or listen to some meditative music, just really get your mind off of things, because you want to have that in your room. But I personally think there's kind of a nice middle ground, if you really are wanting to go anywhere you want to go, where it doesn't look like you're shopping, they're not worried about yield protection, and it's probably between about a 167 or a 172. That said, I've had clients where they're outliers, and I some of them I don't know the specific funding that was received, but I've had clients get into Cornell with an unreportable GPA and a 161. They just had a strong application, and
the application clearly matters. Okay, I mean, it seems to me that the quality of the application in its totality would be a necessary but perhaps not a sufficient condition to get into a good law school. Would you agree?
I would agree, but I would also add that. I mean, my philosophy is, I've seen this, and I've worked with people who, I mean, I actually have redone cycles that where other people have worked with consultants, and it's just kind of odd to be in that position. But it's I can see and I know what has happened. I mean, I've seen people with these stratospheric scores get just results that are you just wouldn't believe. You go, well, I've asked people, is there a criminal background you didn't disclose? What's I mean, truly, I've just said what when I first started seeing this. But you have to understand that the admissions committees are getting so many other, they're getting flooded with these applications, not as many as they were before. But if you're just rehashing the same thing over and over again, and you have there's this tone of entitlement or anything that makes somebody go ick, and you may not even realize that saying certain things would kind of trigger a reaction with somebody who had a legal writing background, for example. I think that's possibly why, and I've seen it happen. I've looked at an application where somebody had these stratospheric scores, and pretty much the outcome was worse than any of my clients, except one in the cohort. And I had clients that I didn't do the LSAT cycle with, but and had scores in the 150s that are doing, that had better outcomes with money. And some schools said no to these clients with scores in the 170s and 3.5s, 3.8s.
Well, it seems to me that you have to spend some time researching, knowing, and understanding the law school you're applying to. I mean, all of these law schools they overlap in certain ways, but they have different ideas about what their educational mission is and should be, I think, right?
And it's possible, but at the end of the day, I have a distinct feeling there's a one type that there's, you can almost guarantee that it's not going to message improperly, and it's you communicate humility, you communicate openness, you're willing to say I don't know what I don't know, but you're also willing to show that you can throw the gauntlet down and you've got what they've got. And you have to communicate that it would be essentially, and I don't know how to put my finger on this. It's like, when you see it, but they would say it would be a mistake not to have this person on board. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, I'll have clients say, well, this school has, this type of clinic. And at the end of the day, this is a generalist degree. And so I really don't think that any particular school, it would almost even seem a little sophomoric if somebody were to talk about a certain clinic. I feel, and that's just my opinion, because you don't know what you don't know going in. You don't know until you've been there, and I mean that in the least patronizing way possible. And so it's just they just want to know that you're ready to be humbled. Because that was my experience. I mean, it was 1L was just like somebody threw a bucket of cold water over my head.
What was your? How did you experience first year law school? How was it?
And this is the thing. I mean, it was almost like my experience with the LSAT, where I got my first score back, and I said, "Oh, this is okay." I mean, and I didn't have a real, it wasn't where I wanted it to be, but I didn't get that. But on my first semester at USC, my legal writing professor was looking at me, and I got this good job over the summer, and she actually said in front of the class, "How did you get that?" It was really a wake up call. But luckily, and that's why I encourage students to look for a good fit. And I didn't realize that I just got lucky and found a good fit there, but that you have a school that's willing to kind of, because once they have you in, they don't want the attrition. They want to make sure that you graduate, but that you do well also. And so they stepped in, and I realized, what got me through undergrad was not going to get me through law school. And even what got me through, raising my LSAT score, but is not going to get me through law school. I need to really buckle down and be truly, truly organized. And so, I brought my GPA up by, just quite a bit more than I'd like to admit, for my first and second semester, because I just didn't know, how to do precision work like that. I mean, it was just not something I was used to.
Agree that legal thinking, law school thing, is a very, very different kind of thinking than I think anybody's been exposed to hasn't been there. Would you agree?
Yeah. I think it was a combination of that and just the pinpoint accuracy that they it may be different at different schools. I mean, I've done more kind of informal surveying of schools where about what they can offer. For example, Duke has for my international clients, they actually have more support for ESL students, no matter their program, and they have some folks that work with ESL, international students that are going into JD programs. They're not just getting shunted into LLM programs, and that's something I checked up on 2 years ago. And I usually just do a little bit of background research, but it's anecdotal. But that's more of what I look for, not necessarily. I have seen though that. Legal writing is probably the most important element of first year in my opinion, and I have seen vast differences rankings notwithstanding between the rigor of programs and what they require and even the level of materials that are being handed out, things like that. It's just very that can differ very a lot. But other than that, it's just, it's the brass tacks, and you have to figure out what works for you and figure out just honestly how to maximize your time.
And on balance, looking back, did you like law school?
I love law school. If I could be on a full ride and go maybe part-time at night and just keep doing it on repeat like Groundhog Day, I'd do it. And I get that question a lot. Why aren't you practicing? And it's just that I really enjoy what I do, and I don't, I like exploring, different opportunities, and I just try and make sure that this stays number one. I mean, and I use digital scaffolding. I like to call them my digital babysitters, and I'm very big about having the calendaring and everything's got a time and a place and that I'm compliant and I'm still looking for that perfect solution. But it's very much about the JD doesn't mean you're going to be going in and cranking out memos. It was probably one of the most liberating experiences when I saw the things that I was able to be exposed to, it was game changing. I mean, seeing, sitting in, pre-appellate mediations with, large banks and a single, individual who is taken for a run or watching how, mediators work between, caucus parties and, sitting through voir dire. I mean, it's a liberating thing. And the culture was great there at USC. It was a very collegial. It wasn't hyper competitive, and so I think that it really may depend school by school. But I had a great 3 years. I loved it.
Moving back a little bit to the whole LSAT thing. Now I want to ask you a series of questions here, recognizing that your answers are going to be extreme generalities. But I just want to get a sense of where your presumptions on this would lie. One of the questions that people are often asked is, how long should you prepare for the LSAT? When should you begin? What are your, again, recognizing this could not be one size fits all, what would be your starting principle?
This is the thing. I'm the first to say, I don't know. I truly don't know. I have been shocked at the gains that people have made in short periods of time. I know what I can do to foster it. Can I guarantee it? Absolutely not. Is more time better? Sometimes. But it really is up to the individual schedule. I have clients that are, take a leave of absence at work, and they have the luxury of being able to do that. I have clients that are working at large accounting firms and pulling 12-hour days and studying when they can at night, and they get it done. It's just that's one of the reasons I don't send out I don't really have these deliverables like schedules and things like that, because it's an individualized journey, and things happen, life happens, and the goal is to just become as bulletproof as possible, where it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what question type it is. It doesn't matter if you're taking this thing on a chalkboard. It's just, you've got your time, you block it off, you put the barriers up to the point where you're not neglecting your responsibilities too much, just a little bit, but just, well, getting this thing done.
Okay. All right. So you got to get it done. So let's imagine that, I would imagine that from time to time that, your tutoring services are paid for by parents and family.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, it really varies.
Yeah, well, let's say a parent calls you up and, is getting ready to sign somebody up for your services and asks you a very simple question. Says, I understand what the LSAT's for, but could you tell me, what the LSAT actually tests? What would you say?
Yeah, my answer would be I think it's kind of almost like a go-to, but it's how are you able to avoid making false inferences under pressure? How well do you do that? And I use this analogy. It's kind of like highway mode, where they want to see if you're going to be almost allergic or hyper allergic or under allergic to these false inferences. And so I'll often say to a client or say to a client's parent, I tend to not, I get more, it's more just talking to the client, but if it's a parent, I message it, similarly, but essentially it's, you're driving on the highway. Okay. And sometimes, for me, I'm very relaxed on, even if there's cars around me, so on and so forth, but it's, you're not thinking about the fact that you've got, four or six, eight cylinders just banging up and down, little explosions going on that you're basically being carried, with, a quarter of a square meter of rubber touching the ground, and you're just kind of floating on inflated, things of rubber. I mean, you're not thinking about all of these things, because if you were, you would be paralyzed, and you can't take all of these things into account, and the same thing goes with understanding. You can't have this, if you go in, I get a lot of folks that call me and say, I want to understand how to do this. And I say, that's a failed mission, because can you understand a light bulb? Can you understand a piece of paper? I mean, it's an endless point. And so what the goal is to manage and get that allergy in the right, in a good spot where you're picking out those false inferences. You don't accidentally move into somebody's lane and hit them or this or that, but you're not looking and parsing apart every bit of this test to the point where you're not completing the sections or you're fatiguing yourself too much. And it's walking a tightrope. And so when it comes down to it, it's not that you're not disciplined, but it's you're learning how to discipline your mind. And you might be very studious and stick to the schedule, but you might have a hard time with highway mode and avoiding those false inferences.
So, well, to summarize what you're saying, I think that would this be correct, okay, that LSAT's about avoiding false inferences and making better decisions under pressure?
Yes.
Okay.
Essentially what I said initially.
Okay. I think that makes a lot of sense. I'd like to, go over to this. I saw in the group that you posted this really, really interesting thing about this GoFundMe initiative that you've set up. And I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that, because I think that's incredibly interesting. I mean, I've got it up here in front of me. And it says transformative coaching, legal education, accessible legal education. So it looks to me as though what you're doing broadly is trying to create financial access to legal education for people, better financial access. Is that right?
Yeah, and so it's something I had been kind of kicking around, and you know, again, you know, it is difficult because right now I have one person I've vetted fully and trusted to, you know, as a guest coach, if you will, Cameron, who works with me, and he's starting out, and you know, and he's shadowed a couple of sessions, you know, via Skype. And of course, you know, client knows I'm like we kind of it's two tutors, and Cameron's just gonna kind of hang out in the background, and maybe, you know, we'll pop in here or there. But it's it's essentially, you know, the optics of it are difficult to navigate. But at the end of the day, I have clients who have no problem, you know, with my rates, and then I have clients who just, you know, think they're absurd or truly can't, you know, pay. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I had a scholarship for my class that didn't really move the ball forward for me. And you know, when I did it in undergrad, and so it's
you took a group course, did you? A group LSAT?
Yes, yes, and I was able to find a scholarship for it. And so that's the thing. I'm not seeing, you know, I sometimes will suggest this to the clients, but it's a tough conversation. I mean, and I'll do installments and things like that. I won't charge everything up front, but it's just, it's a tough conversation because I have to, you know, make sure that I'm not, you know, diluting things or being unfair. And so I just kept holding back on this, and then I realized, you know, why don't I just go for it? Who cares what people say? Like, who cares what? And so,
well, I think it's a very interesting idea. Let me just read the summary of. Do I have your permission to read this out? The summary from the GoFundMe page.
Yeah, and again, it's going to evolve. The summary is going to evolve, I do want to qualify it that I do have a nonprofit background and actually a credential, but I have articles of incorporation written for a separate entity what I'm doing now, I'm not running it as a 501c3. It's not.
I wouldn't do that either. You don't want the bureaucracy. You're just trying to help people, you know, achieve their life goals better. But, you know, yeah. I think that this I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it says summary, this campaign will provide reduced cost and or free services for prospective law students with demonstrated need. CAS waiver, peace officers defined broadly, and veterans. You know, I mean, that's really good. No question about it. And I certainly congratulate you on rolling this thing out, recognizing, of course, that it's in its early stages and will certainly evolve, you know, in different ways. But the, you know, the idea of it, I think, is really great.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that, you know, this whole law school thing, you know, getting in the application process itself is, you know, is hugely, hugely expensive. I think it's probably reached the point where, or a long time ago, reached the point where people feel if they're not getting some kind of outside help, you know, whether it's LSAT or application, personal statement coaching or something, they feel they may be at a disadvantage. Which, for certain people, clearly is true. You know, I don't think for everybody, but for certain people, is clearly true. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, my dream for this, it really, and that's the thing is, I'm trying not to deviate from that mission statement, but I'm also planning, and it was on my to-do list, but then again, I keep realizing that, you know, my week and, you know, but my schedule is kind of a little flipped from the rest of everybody because I'm working when people have the time when they have their off time and so on and so forth. And so, but I've been wanting to reach out and, you know, see if, you know, a particular professor just know. I mean, it's like that legal standard. You know it when you see it. Like if somebody, you know, need notwithstanding, if there's somebody just really is just built for this. And in whatever they wind up doing, the JD is going to be such a value add, not just for the person, but for them to help other people. Because it, again, you know, I'm not actively practicing, but it's, you know, I point people in directions. I mean, I can say this, and I don't want to, you know, sound like this, like, ooh, hero, but I've probably saved, for completely unrelated reasons, like clients probably $10,000 to $15,000 in the past 30 days, just from, you know, car accident happens, and I just say, you know, don't settle for what they give you, just sort of things like that, and I'll just send them a link to something or this or that. And but what I'd really like to do is just from the get go, you know, find these individuals and just really just you know mentor them or pair them up, because I had that program I launched last year, the Connect program, and it you know, got a little bit of interest, but I mean, I can go in and find, you know, and when people would take me up on it, I mean, I'll spend the time, you know, unbilled, just finding somebody through LinkedIn, and you know, you can parse through and find, you know, somebody who would be a really good fit as a mentor, and find a list and just get, you know, have people who are there to kind of help you through this process and just be a sounding board. And yeah. So I kind of want to, you know, that it's going to be that it's going to be the LSAT thing. It's going to be a just, you know, my goal is just to just essentially have this like 100x multiplier. I want to be able to look back and say, for every dollar given, $100 of student loan debt is eliminated. And so that's, you know, that's the goal.
That's fantastic. All right. Listen, I think we should probably call here for today. Maybe we can do another one down the road. And for other LSAT tutors in the LSAT study group, I would like to do a similar interview with you as well. But thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it. And, you know, I'm not going to wish you good luck, because I don't think life operates on luck, but I think that you've got a great vision, and I wish you the physical, intellectual, emotional resources, whatever is required to achieve those goals. So,
John, thank you. I sure need it. So I definitely appreciate the wishes.
All right. So we'll pick this up again some point down the road. Thanks very much again. I'm speaking with Alexander Kaplan, who is an LSAT tutor, pre-law admission consultant, pre-law mentor, a man in Southern California who really wants to help you achieve your goal of getting into law school and becoming a lawyer. So you'll find him online. Actually, Alexander, do you have a website or something like that you'd like to?
Yeah, I do. It's I thought it was going to be super simple, but I wind up having to, you know, spell it out, or it's confused. And but it's akjd.co, not .com. So Alpha Kilo Juris Doctor .co. And you can go on there. There's a little request information thing. You can book a free chat with me. Again, you know, I love to talk to people. So.
You can also find him on the Facebook on the Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups LSAT Study Group, and he is a frequent participant there, and I really appreciate his participation. All right, Alexander.
Yes, thank you
so much. I think we both need to get on with our days. Okay.
Yes. All right, John. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Be well.